Welcome back to Cogumentative, where we're broadcasting live from Concourse SA. I'm your host, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times, and as usual, I'm joined by
Mark Paluta
and Nadav Ravid.
And Mike is not here because Mike is doing, I don't know, he's a bodyguard apparently.
He's someone's bodyguard.
He's looking after someone.
Or he's doing a cash in transit drive.
Yeah.
Something like that.
He's security or something.
He's like that Ray Donovan guy. What's his name?
Yeah, Ray Donovan.
Lieb Schreiber.
That's it.
Yeah.
Whatever you thought, whatever it was, was more important than being here.
Exactly. So. But it's not, because Concourse SA.
That's brilliant.
It's quite a thing. If you like, if you're OCD about cars, and you never take it out because they get dirty.
Yeah.
But like me, really.
So you trailer your car everywhere.
Yeah.
And look at it.
Exactly.
But forget how to drive it.
Yeah, correct. And okay. If you do try, it won't start because it hasn't been turned over in like 2 years.
So wastefulness, basically.
Yeah.
But what a lovely setting. Fantastic day. Sun is shining. This is. Spring. Is today the first?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the first. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is almost spring day in Joburg.
At Stain City.
Flippin' lovely.
And I would just like to say Stain City has got the best grass I've ever seen.
It's unbelievable.
It's thick and green and luxurious.
I think we've spoken about the grass more than we have about the cars.
I thought you were maybe talking about recreational.
You
mean the underfoot grass?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
I just want to go barefoot. I mean, I'm already badly dressed.
Everyone's looking at you weird when you're talking about your grass.
Hey, that's like the next. Lord. That's the next place to. Anyway,
incredible. But it is amazing. Yeah.
No, thanks for organizing, producer Paige, for getting us here, and thanks to Concourse SA for having us and hosting us.
Lovely.
It is quite beautiful looking out over Joburg, and the sun is out, as we said, and there's some beautiful metal.
Thomas says his guns out. He literally has his guns.
My pins.
Sun's out, guns out.
We've seen
guns
his calves for the first time in about
my dainty ankles.
Yeah. I think it's the first time he's
but
seen his
some,
calves.
There's some serious metal here today, don't you think?
Yeah,
other than your guns.
Yeah.
Well, there's some proper cars. What for me a highlight would probably be the 300 SL Roadster.
Yep.
Unbelievable car. I think it's owned by Mr. Scrabanti. That's
an absolutely lovely thing.
And we've got some friends we'll be talking to in the coming segments about the process of restoration and the process of judging a restoration.
Thomas, what's a Concours?
Yeah, tell
Concours.
Us.
Well, from my understanding, so it's probably wrong, it's basically, it's like it's a competition where originality, so you bring your car here, and if it's clean and original, hasn't been mucked with, you know.
You think that's
a perfect specimen?
I don't think
it's that. You know, it's the search for the perfect specimen.
It is.
Of
so,
a particular car.
However,
factory originality.
That,
as the factory would have made it. So, in some cases,
the closest to new.
New.
Yeah, closest
possible,
to new.
Yeah.
But I think in some cases we get better than new.
We do. That's
better.
That's another discussion.
Yeah, better than what the factory could have produced.
But I mean, for someone who's listening to this, who doesn't even know what Concourse SA is.
Yeah.
You know, also, you bring your car, you bring a restoration, you bring a 50, 60, 70-year-old car that's, in theory, going to be judged about how indistinguishable from new it is.
Yeah.
I think that's
I think that's what your point is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you're showing off your wares, as it were. Mm. A lot of effort goes into making these cars so perfect, both mechanically and in terms of getting them clean and detailed. And it's a whole other aspect of classic car world.
So what is the point? Some people might ask. Why do you want to?
It's kind of like a pissing contest.
No,
I have the ultimate.
It's a bit of that, but obviously
with the triumph
at the Concourse comes value.
Yeah, it's also true.
I think these things are, and most of the cars we're looking at now, are very expensive collectible cars. And I think the higher you score in a competition like this, the more valuable inevitably your car becomes, I think.
Yeah, there's something to that. You know, you add it to the car's history file and it was the Concours winner in 2019. And if people understand what the Concours is and which Concours you won it, it says something about your car if it was judged by other car people to be. So there's.
You could almost buy it sight unseen.
Yeah.
Knowing that it had been judged by the correct people,
and
it was that good.
There is, in fact, a team of judges who walks around and
wear white bowler hats.
They do.
And Panama hats.
And they look at each car and they open and close all the doors and push all the buttons and they make sure that it's as close as it's supposed to be to original.
And all the right stickers are there under the hood and on the
the door jams.
They do start them. Eh?
I think they have to start.
Depends on the Concours. I think it depends on the rules.
Okay. I saw them trying to start a
car. But it's nothing about driving. In the end, it's nothing about driving.
No, nothing about driving. It's just literally the engine doesn't have to be connected to the wheels.
No, yeah. It makes me feel very weird. Yeah, it does.
It's just like going to a Miss South Africa or something like that. She might not be able to cook.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But she looks fantastic in a bikini.
Yeah, but for some people, so that's all that's important. You
know? So what they should be doing?
People are not like us with depth who look for more in a lady. You know?
So they should do the concourse judging, and then they should have a quarter mile, and we should do time trials or something.
Well, yeah. Pebble Beach, which is the jewel in the crown of jewels in the crown of Concours.
Insists
that all the cars are driven on.
Really?
Yeah.
And we know some of these cars have been trailered here.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing, is that you know what you're looking at works, which makes it more honest.
It does, I agree.
Yes, it's brilliant looking, but it's still got you under its own steam.
Agreed.
What's also interesting, I mean, I went to Le Mans once and there was a Concours there. And the car that won was actually this car that was knackered. It had no paint. It had been stripped down to its body shell. It was bare, basically. It was like a barn find. And this car won because it was deemed to be original.
Yeah.
Even though it was completely...
So it's obviously in a certain class.
Weather-beaten.
Exactly. But that brings us to the point that in any concourse, there's a system of classes, and so depending on which class you enter. So if that was a preservation class,
it went all out.
It's unusual to be an overall winner, but a preservation class is a real thing where, you know, you rather try and preserve the patina that we speak about so much and present it as good as it can be.
Yeah, we've done a podcast around patina.
In fact, a good example is the Rolls Royce that's just down the hill from us.
Oh yeah,
it's a 30s. Yeah. Rolls Royce. That was a barn find, a true barn find. All the paint is peeling off. And what they're saying is the seats are knackered, there's spiders all over the place. And what they're saying is that by the next year's concourse, they want it to be completely restored.
So that's brilliant that they brought it here.
It's quite interesting.
Showed like it is now.
Yeah, yeah.
Lovely. So, we're actually going to interview someone who's done exactly that to a car that he found in a barn in Natal, and he's turned it into a car for the lawns here today. Which will be very cool.
Well, should we go and
let's go find him.
Speak to some people.
Amongst
look at
all
some
the
cars.
The finery and the good-looking folks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Cool.
Excellent. We'll chat again out in the field shortly.
Man, this aircon is racist.
For the latest political news
and in-depth discussion and analysis
on events making headlines in South Africa's socio-political space,
join myself, Amil Amrao, and my comrades from the Sunday Times Politics Desk for our Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. You can find new weekly episodes on the Times Live website every Wednesday.
This is not a shift.
Can you please come in?
Welcome back to Car Argumentative. We've been walking through the field looking at some cars, and we found a man called Matt Creve. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Excellent. Nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us here in the Concourse Lounge.
Matt's already a fan of the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yes. I'm first.
Fantastic.
That's all he listens to.
At least you've got one fan.
Yeah, we have that one.
Yeah.
He wants our autograph afterwards.
Exactly.
Autographs.
So, Matt, we found you because you've got a car that Nadav quite likes, apparently.
Do I?
Yeah, that's...
Have I converted him to force
No.
Yeah, that was actually the biggest.
I'm not sure about this.
I don't know about
I believe you. I believe that is
due,
true. He just doesn't want
to
admit it.
To Matt, but yeah. I don't know.
Really,
not sure.
Really.
Not converted yet.
No.
He actually asked Matt to sell it to him earlier.
Yeah.
Tell me the concept.
Yeah.
Anyway, what is it, Matt?
Yeah, tell us all about it.
So Matt's exhibiting. Matt's actually one of the exhibitors.
He is.
Yeah, so that's my first Concourse South Africa.
Okay.
Come up from the beautiful part of the country just to visit you guys here.
Where
there's no oxygen. In the thin air.
What do you think about this grass, by the way?
Fantastic.
Incredible.
But the car looks good on the grass. It's a 1956 T1A, which is
Porsche
356, which is known as a Beehive A because it's the last year where they had the little Beehive round rear lights.
What is a T? I mean, I've never heard T1, T2.
So to describe effectively, when the first 356 was released, they called it the 356.
Yes.
They then released a 356A.
Okay.
And then in the marketplace, there was confusion because people would say, I've got a 356, and they'd say, A. Well, then the terminology pre-A was sort of born from that.
Okay.
And then from there on, Porsche used the T2 for the B, and it's quite complicated. It's not as linear as you'd expect.
Okay.
Typical and then it went, really. Yeah, and then yeah. and then it went to T5 Bs, and then T6 effectively was the
so
C.
So when did the first 356 come out?
We've just been through that whole discussion with this Type 64 that was auctioned.
Oh yes, okay.
That was a pre Porsche car, but the first one was the 48 Gmund cars. The
48.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everything from 48 to 55 was pre-A.
Okay.
Became known as pre-A.
And yours is a 56.
Correct. So it's a Type 1A.
Yeah.
So it's a right-hand drive. It's a coupe. It's got a lot of pre-A components, but it's obviously the upgraded A motor. They changed the motors. It went 13 and 1500s up to 1600. The gearbox mounts changed from a single weird mount on the side to double mounts.
Okay.
And there are lots of little nuances that change through the time.
Okay. So the Porsche evolution.
The evolution is there. The DNA is very clear. Anyone who loves Porsche and hasn't watched the Made by Hand documentary
Made
on
by Hand.
356 factory tour in 1960 with Ferry.
Watch it.
It's unbelievable. 45 minutes.
I haven't watched it.
Where you can see how handmade these cars were. I mean, you see the guy painting, in inverted commas, the seam seal on it. It's an old man with a bucket of tar and a stick, and he's whacking this seam seal on the bottom of the car. It's a fantastic video.
Is it on YouTube?
It's on YouTube.
Okay.
So if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out.
What's it called again?
Made by Hand.
Made by Hand. Okay, check that out.
And that's the essence of... the discovery process for me with this restoration is that a lot of the stuff doesn't fit like Lego-like.
Yeah.
You know, it's handmade. The lead work, you can see once you've stripped the paint, you can see where the doors were leaded up to make the lines vaguely straight. Everything is, you know, it's reasonable. It's a very fancy production process for its time, but it is
and
handmade.
And the end result is good.
It's handmade.
It takes a lot of hand beating. And
so sometimes you're trying to get something... You think, well, you find a bolt that's cut off and all gnarled at the end, and you think someone just put the wrong bolt in here. But then you go through the diagrams and the workshop manuals, and you find out that to clear the firewall and whatever that bolt had to do, it was much longer than its end size.
Oh, really?
So it was in the workshop manual, it says cut off roughly, cut off roughly,
man.
And dab with black paint.
So this actually, we were discussing it before you came on. We were saying how some of these cars have been over restored.
Yeah,
so
what's a big discussion?
To better than factory, yeah. Mm. And what you're saying is, with enough research, you can get it to actual factory spec.
Personally, I would rather replace things that technology has given us that are better than the originals.
Oh, really? Okay.
So some of the, for lead, for example, is not a great. It's, I mean, filler, it does what it does what it's needed to do at the time perfectly, right. But it does. You do find rust around it. It is heavy. It is harder to work with.
So you use a more modern filler.
So the modern fillers are, much less toxic, much easier to work with, much lighter, much less likely to rust.
Interesting that you
would introduce
that
rust.
Yeah, makes sense.
But you know, there are people who swear against it.
So your car specifically, that you is now, we see the end product, but it's a result of a long, I think, a three-year
process.
Where is it from? I mean, is it like a family heirloom, or did you find it?
So we found it in, three cars were found in the owner's possession in Natal.
Yeah.
They were shopped around at the time because the market was heating up for Porsche and especially for the older ones, but the cars were in dire straits. In the sense that they hadn't been properly stored, a lot of rust.
Yeah, being in KZN.
The earliest car was quite a rare, a Cabrio, was so badly rusted that when they were moved out of the storage barn, for want of a shelter, the car fell apart into four pieces.
Really?
Crumbled to the ground. So the quarters were there and the floor had completely disappeared. I remember seeing the pedals hanging underneath the car.
Oh, no.
There's no floor anywhere around there.
Okay.
This car was was complete, and that's why for me it worked out quite well, because to find the pieces that are correct for that year and for that model is very difficult. But there was a lot of body work to be done, and most people walked away from it. So I most probably was the last guy to see the thing, but I was in love with the shape. I always have been. You know, I had an XK 120 in the family when I was growing up, and there was a beaten up Porsche 356 which had the same kind of ethos, those lovely curves and lines.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to sort of drive, but it was never drivable. And so when I saw these, I
thought, "You're selling us on the idea."
No, I mean,
I'm starting to like it more.
The art is there. I mean, yeah. It's definitely a more artistic looking car than any of the 911s.
Yeah, I kind of see that. I used to be a big fan of the Speedster. I suppose I still am.
Yeah, the Speedster's a great car. Yeah. I mean, that kind of has the whole, like, James Dean, kind of like
ethos.
Hollywood, so LA.
But the Speedster,
you know,
was a lower price model, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a pared down model specifically for racing.
Yeah, exactly.
That the main importer, the US importer, Max Hoffman, convinced Porsche to build.
Great. No,
do you own any other Porsches?
So this was the beginning of a little bit of a, let's call it a type of 356 measles, because I then I then ended up taking the other car found in the barn, which was a C, also very complete, less body work to be done, but missing more parts than this car was missing. So the decision there, the idea was to take both cars and do them at the same time, so that we learnt the language and could apply what we learned from each car to each other and do it once. So we did both cars stripped at the same time, both cars bodywork at the same time, both cars. And then once it got to final fitment and painting, we let them split apart. But that whole process, that learning curve, we tried to use for both cars at the same time. But because that
was a right call.
That was a good call.
Yeah.
But it made the assumption that there was a lot more similarities than there are differences. And that's problem. You can be lulled into, for example, the right-hand drive mechanism in these cars. If you look at the birth certificate, or what they call the Cardex, which was a typewritten document in the factory for each car, the number, color, first owner, where it was delivered. So that A, for example, was one of few cars delivered to Africa, delivered to Nairobi, Kenya,
really?
1956 to a doctor by a dealer called the Cooper Motor Corporation.
Wow.
That all data is all captured there. And that's why the COAs that we get sometimes from Porsche, apparently not so much anymore, are quite valuable. They've got a lot of that information, but they don't have all the information. But that Cardex educates you quite a lot. And one of the things on there, it says in German, right-hand drive. That was an option. So the right-hand drive mechanism in these cars is completely foreign. It's a, you know,
between the A and the C. Yeah.
Well, between anything else we've ever seen. There's a special bracket made, and it adapts the way the accelerator works, and it's different between the A and the C.
Yeah.
So we couldn't find this thing on the C, and we're like, how does this thing work? But the truth is, it had changed completely. That improved the engineering, so it can mislead you sometimes.
Yeah. So the
but the key, there's only one. The key takeaway for me, if I ever had to impart advice to someone trying to do this, is get the parts book for that car from that year. Mm. Not the PET off the internet, which is a generalized thing that's lost in time. It's specific. Whatever you have to pay, it's worth it, whether it's $500, $600, $800 to get the parts book for that car for that year.
Amazing.
Because all these tiny nuances are in there, and that's where you spend time, either waste time or you get it right.
So, you've got that was now the end of this 3-year process from finding it in.
So 3 years, two cars done.
And so can you tell us a little bit more about bringing it up to Johannesburg, getting it ready for something like showing it at a concourse?
Yeah, the concourse. I mean, this is my first concourse at this level. I've obviously done show and shine sort of concourses that the Porsche Club does.
Okay.
And also we've got concourse events inside the Porsche Club, which, you know, you take off the wheel and you exhibit the calipers to make sure everything's correct. This is unique in the sense that the judges can't be experts on the car to the same level that we are.
Yeah, they aren't.
Because they have to be generalists. Some of them are. So Tony Vaughan, who's restored many of these cars, is walking around, and he was actually a judge. and he pointed out, you know, this is weird that this is there. And I said, no, but the T1 doesn't have a tow hook. So from the T2, there's a tow hook underneath the car, and the whole battery box is differently shaped. The battery's been a different place. So
this is a guy who's restored them, and you're still educating him.
Well, that's the thing about these
so much
tiny little substrates as they were developing the car so quickly. Now, Tony didn't know about that tow hook thing. I mean, can you imagine one of the Healy guys or one of the Austin, one of the Rolls Royce guys? That's gonna, it's weird from that point of view. You're not sure exactly how they're going to judge it. But personally, my belief is that there should be a little track and we should take them around for a ride.
We were just saying that.
That's how it should work.
Yeah, we were saying
I mean, that's lovely to look at how they look. The goal of the concourse in their mind is to see the cars as they would have come off the showroom floor.
Yeah.
So if you've got your invoice, you've got your service book, driver's manual, workshop manual, whatever you could have got from the factory, that's what they want to see. In the case of the Porsches, it's quite funny. I sort of remember this from when I was a kid. The service book had vouchers in it, like coupons. So I've got I've just got this like an old used checkbook, you know, like the stubs are there. Then there's nothing else.
Because
the vouchers were obviously handed into Lindsay Saker. But,
that's really interesting. I like that. But I do agree with you that you should be driving them.
I think it would add a great...
We don't even know, like we were saying, if the drive shafts are connected, you know?
Yeah. Well, you do have to... So the first part of the event is after registration, you do have to drive the 2 kilometers in
to
the venue.
Okay, so you've taught us something.
So if you can't make that, you don't continue.
So those drive shafts are connected.
I mean, I was pedaling under the floor.
I thought you'd fixed all the rust so we couldn't get through.
Yeah.
No, really, that's interesting, Matt. You've taught us a lot.
Yeah, we have, yeah.
So, yeah, that's partly why we always get so interested in this process, because we do learn stuff every time. I mean, when I finished polishing the car 3 days ago in Cape Town, I looked at it and I thought, that's as good as it can be. Once you get up here and it's in the sun and you start going through fine details, like literally not specks of dust because it's windy and whatever, but little bits of polish left here or there, or little bits of chrome where it's peeling, or you see the whole car in a different light. Yeah. Partly because some of the other cars are so brilliantly prepared, unbelievable detail, and so like this SL 300 or 190 over there. Yeah,
300.
Barely been driven.
You can see it. It is driven.
No, I'm sorry. What I'm saying is, it's not a car that was left in a garage with a leaky roof for 30 years. So you can see the quality of a car that's never been restored, but been beautifully kept, like an old Rolls. And then the how you see your own car changes, and you realize all the tiny flaws, and it's true
that you're never done. You're never done. It'll never be finished.
I think that's why, if you're smart about this process, you say you do one or two concours, and then you start driving the car and enjoy it.
Absolutely.
And I've got a one owner B, which I found very luckily, partly through this process, because I integrated into the whole 356 community, and someone phoned me up and said, listen, my great grandfather's got this car that's been left in the family, no one's driving it. So I lucked into this car. It drives beautifully. It's got cracks, it's got paint scratches, it's got chipped wheels, but it drives perfectly.
Ropey
might be, but not quite as ropey as a 911 T that's been overdriven. But the point is, I don't mind any of that, because the patina is perfect and it drives beautifully.
Yeah. But we hammer this point home on the show all the time. And in the end, we think patina and enjoying what it's designed for, which is the drive, ultimately sort of outranks this sort of concourse scenario.
Well, I've got is that if you do a restoration, bring it to the concourse after the restoration. You'll get some very fair criticism, feedback. If you want to correct that and then go to another concourse, that's fine. But it's done, and then start enjoying the car. And the truth is, you will never come back to the concourse with the car once you've driven. We're doing Can I do a punt, a little advert?
Please. Whatever.
We're trying to get 30 cars together to do a 6 to 8 day tour of the Cape in March next year.
Lovely.
Stuttgart has said if we can get 20 cars together, they'll send an official photographer down, and they'd love to document it.
Let us know. We'd be keen.
Well,
I know about
it's only this is the key, four cylinders, Mark.
Oh, no.
We don't do that. So that 912 or...
We've got a 912 in restoration.
But do you think that Thomas should be driving his SC? Is it safe to drive? I mean, it's the kind of car you can use, especially without the hydraulic chain tensioners.
We said this before. SC means short range.
Oh, okay. So I thought it meant Super Carrera.
Okay, but, I mean, let's say the judges are out of earshot, okay? Let's, bring out your peacock feathers. Why is your car a concourse winner?
Well, it's the time. It's the time and it's the understanding when you do it that you're doing it to get it as right. So I've never done a restoration like this. All the work I've always done has been to make my 964s the kind of cars I wanted them to be.
Yeah.
GT3s effectively, but with air-cooled motors.
Yeah.
So it's a very useful rationalization to have, because if there's something missing on the car that's expensive, you can say, well, I don't need power steering.
Yeah.
I'll come up with a better solution.
More of a purist car.
The 997 Cup car used an Opel Kadett power steering pump. I'll put the same thing in.
So
you get away. But whereas for this one, I just decided, let's see what it's really about. Let's do it. And that means, unfortunately, for example, this car we've sprayed three times.
Okay.
The first time, we thought we had it great. We unfortunately used the right paint and everything. We got a batch of spot putty that was bad. It got recalled 3 months later. They called us. They said, you need to not use that stuff. We said, we've used it already. They said, well, if anything happens, call us. 3 months later, we started getting all this popping around the paint. So luckily, Glasrid stood by their word. They replaced the paint, and they gave us something to redo it.
But now,
we had to disassemble the whole car. So we had to take everything off. Obviously, we didn't take the drive shafts and everything out, which meant we weren't spraying on a rotisserie, but that wasn't a problem.
It was the same color. So.
And then in assembly, unfortunately, you just make mistakes. Things happen.
Yeah.
Someone tries to do something by themselves, and a screwdriver slips, and all of a sudden you've got a dent, and silver, metallic silver doesn't blend so easily. So,
Okay. Wow.
So that's
a lot of work.
That's what it's about. It's about the amount of work. And unfortunately, if you don't, I think you do get rewarded if you get that work right. The problem is if you don't keep going until it's right, you end up with something that someone else has to redo.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should.
But in this company, I would never say it was the best car. I mean, there's just too many. Tim is an absolute demon at the detail on these cars.
Tim Abbott is also exhibiting one or two cars. Yeah. And
these guys, old school from Verena and Yadu.
I think you can hold your head proud. Yeah, it does look brilliant.
Looks great.
Really
looks in the sun, the sun here,
shines.
The clear skies, it shines and it shows everything. And the car looks great. And I think we wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, we do. Thanks.
And what you've done, he's brought a car back. He's brought back from the dead.
That's a resurrection.
Correct. That's a resurrection, and that's always good.
And he's going to be using it.
Well, the club's coming for a drive tomorrow.
We're all coming for a drive.
We're doing a Sunday drive tomorrow.
Yeah.
Come join us.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thanks a lot for joining us on the show.
Thank you, sir.
And we're going to take another walk around and find some more people to chat to.
Cool.
Join me, Paul Ash, in a beautiful soundscape as we explore the world in the Sunday Times Travel Podcast. Find it at sundaytimes.co.za.
Welcome back to Car Argumentative. We've been strolling out on the lawns, looking at the cars and the people and everything else that comes with a concourse. And we stumbled into the one and only Stuart Grant.
The famous, he's having a bit of a cough.
Yes.
The famous Stuart Grant.
He's a very busy man, because when he's not talking on our podcast, he's presenting on TV.
Yeah.
And he's doing the judging. He's one of the judges.
Yeah.
One of how many judges? Five judges.
Five on our team, and I think four on the others.
Nine. So Stu Grant, one of nine Concourse SA judges.
Which is quite a thing. I mean, for them to ask you to be a judge at South Africa's premier concourse means you know your stuff.
Stu,
you know your way around a banger bit of a car.
I don't know if it's quite a thing. I don't really want to do it.
Well, let me qualify.
I just do it.
Let me
quantify.
What? How clean my cars are?
No. Stuart.
Where do you come from? He's going to say where you come from.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is that the mark of a real car person is how many unfinished projects they have.
Yeah.
And in that case, Mr. Grant here pretty much takes the cake. I think you're more qualified than almost anyone I know.
I don't have any unfinished. Yeah. I have just the Renault is the non-runner at the moment. The rest are all running.
Things have improved.
But they never finished.
Well, that's true for everyone here.
But every one of my cars will drive somewhere. The Renault not. Its boot is in. Its engine is in my Fiat's boot.
I see.
As we speak.
Okay.
Waiting to get fixed for about engines. 3 months now.
So, Stu, I've got a question for you. We here at Concourse Essay, which is all about cars that are like super, super clean, original. Mm. The paint's like, you know, every body panel is the correct shade of silver.
yes.
You don't really like that. I mean, like, I've known you for a while, and you kind of like a slightly scratched.
The anti-Concourse.
No, it's not anti-Concourse. I just like cars that are used. And
good point. So these aren't. Generally, these cars aren't. Some of them are.
Yeah.
But and they're not all one silver. Even the best of things that you can find a fault on. Yeah. It's not difficult actually if you start looking. But I'm not for or against it. I just am too lazy to prepare my cars like this. I don't understand how these guys actually.
It's a lot of effort for.
I mean, it's nuts.
We were talking about the reward and maybe the car goes up in value slightly if it's had an award, But it's more. They do it for the love of doing it, I suppose, for having their cars in the best possible condition.
Some guys
condition.
Enjoy that. My old man probably does. I don't. I take mine to the car wash. the cheap car wash.
I mean, I still think like a lot of Concourse is basically like a big pissing contest where the guys have got like a lot of cash and they'll be like, well, I'm going to throw more money at mine so it's cleaner.
Yeah. I think it's at a funny place now because in the 80s, 90s, and you got the Pebble Beach mentality where. To me, that's almost over-restored stuff now. And it encourages non-originality, even though you might have a yellow pen to mark off the nuts and bolts for 63 Corvette is this yellow and 64 it's that yellow. Maybe they say, oh, that's the original shade or whatever, but the stuff is better than the factory. If you look underneath some of these cars, they never looked like that.
No, so
now we have a problem because now it's coming back to the right look, the right sort of, I don't want to say pattern.
So does that score against them when you're doing scoring and over restoration?
What are you looking for as a
judge? It is a bit of opinion on that sort of thing because there is an authenticity or a...
Are we allowed to go through the judging?
We're going to. Paint so let's color, look here. Color, I mean, first of all, originality. We need 10 mark experts for...
Yeah,
20 marks here. So we need.
The shade is correct.
That's like 200 judges if we're going to do that because we don't know if that SL. We know because we know where the car came from that is not the original color.
Okay.
But we only know that because of the people we know.
Yeah.
So now if I get harsh and I say, okay, it's the wrong color, they can even say, oh, it's a period color, maybe 6 cars were built that, whatever. I have to believe the owner.
Yeah, you'd really have to know.
I don't know if that blue on the Stepnose Alpha. Because I don't know that car further than today. I don't know that it was maybe cream.
Does that make no sense, though?
That Alpha.
That's Stepnose Alpha.
That Alpha, I think, is one that's going to put up a big surprise. I don't know from other judges, but it is flipping good.
It's
the
awesome,
Alphas, there's two Alphas that are good. Anyway. But so if the car is too clean underneath, it's just your opinion. As long as I'm consistent and I mark... your car for being too clean or too prepared or too chromed or whatever, then I mark the next one in the same way. It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
It sounds to me like a really almost, you know, you're walking a very thin line between, you know, originality and trust and over-restoration and
I wonder if there were any marks.
It's not easy being a judge.
No, it isn't.
You know, you have to be both fair and yet critical. I find it...
The problem, I think you can't... It, we each, if it was us five as long as each one of us is consistent, it should all come out in the wash, whatever it is. If I'm judging that Alpha versus that SL versus that 2.7 in this exactly the same way, and I come to a total of, so the totals on deductions are now, which also confuses me, but let's say minus 50 out of 200, so that on that one, and I come at minus 40 on the other one. As long as mine lines up, you might come out at minus 80 and minus 30,
but
the percentage is the same for your car to car.
I've never thought of it as a judging as a team exercise, I suppose. Maybe that's silly, but I guess it is. It's not one person's opinion.
Yeah,
it's a lot of experts, and
I think that
is there debate? I mean, between the judges?
There is debate, and they talk about it, but they don't. It's not a team scoring thing.
No.
I'm still scoring mine to mine, but maybe I didn't see the paint run.
Sure.
So it's a team thing where you point out something.
Okay. Do you, though? Are you obliged to point things out?
No, if you want to. I don't have to talk to them if I don't want to.
So they missed something
but
that you saw.
It's useful
because,
you know.
You get a better picture overall of the car.
Yeah, and you don't. You've got 15 minutes, eh?
Yeah.
It sounds long, but, you know, the owner just starts, because there is owner interaction somewhere here. It's only 2 points.
So, what, like, if the owner has a good personality?
Yeah.
And he's chatty and, like,
he's well dressed.
It depends what they're wearing.
Yeah. So, like, I would score, like, minus two.
Minus.
No, but you got your guns out, Tom, so that counts for something.
But,
so those, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you can lose 10 minutes talking about Tom's guns, and you suddenly got 5 minutes of looking at the car. Because,
time,
and some of the guys are really passionate, so they do take that time, or they'll show you, like, it took 3 weeks to get this bitumen off the inside of the wheel arch.
Are there some judges that are mark experts on specific brands?
I would say, yeah, some of them are. I would sort of a British car, Porsche, the European-y sort of stuff of that period, you know, the 70s.
You probably find, like you were mentioning, like a factory spec car, like how clean it would come out the factory. Some marks, I'm sure, would go to extra lengths to prepare their cars for their customers before delivery.
Yeah, well,
whereas
exactly.
others, I'm thinking maybe the Italians
that's where it gets
wouldn't
difficult.
Really care, you know?
It's exactly that. Like, I know that on my Alfa, that thing, the paint runs in the engine bay.
That's
On my Alfetta, the wiring harness ran on the right, and there's an Alfetta from the same 3 months period with the wiring harness on the left.
No,
go
you
figure.
Find, in the Alpha Factory,
Friday or Monday.
No, you could find cars in the same production line that some would have brake boosters and some wouldn't because they'd run out.
Yeah. Well, that's what makes the brand so
passionate.
Inherently passionate.
But also difficult to judge. Difficult to judge.
It's just
so
it's
all
incredible.
These
brings
and
tears
like
to
Mac
my
was
eye.
Explaining the nuances between the different when they change from one
year
to the next.
And the other thing that
we
have a problem as an owner, because, like, I mean, you might go on forums and hear something.
Yeah.
Like that they...
Don't look at me.
Like that
I think
they,
that's something Thomas would do.
He's got sunglasses. How can you tell?
Let's say they... let's say the chassis defensive. Tag is screwed on with self-tappers.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you look at Mercs, like the 6.3s and that, they screwed on. They didn't use...
They weren't welded on.
Rivets.
Oh, okay.
So, like, some oak just needs to say on a forum, Mark, your SL had a riveted chassis plate, and then it becomes
a
belief
thing.
To you, and you tell you, and you, and you.
Yeah, who's to say
and
he's
now,
the god
now
of all
you like God,
SL,
and I'm
yeah.
like, I saw a SL with a screwed-on once,
yeah.
and it was my dad's neighbor's that had it his whole life. And
so that makes this
and then
thing
the owner
so
can get a little bit
that's what
antsy.
I'm saying. I think it's a thin line. It's really difficult.
Yeah,
to get it right.
So you can actually look at the end result of a Concours if you're the owner, so someone like we spoke to, Matt, who's done years of research on his car, and he looks and he just basically ignores the judgment on his car and goes, well, they didn't know enough about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it kind of dilutes the
They can, but I mean, I haven't seen it so far. It's actually been like that Blue Alpha. He was here last year.
He was here last year.
And like there were things like pointed out, like stupid things, like if you're using Wirth hose clamps on an Alpha instead of those like pretty things with the screw in so he's changed them, so like he's come back, so it's just how the guy takes it we're not invincible either, so if they say like actually talking bull, like that's cool, like next year I'll remember, you know. And so it benefits both sides. I think I don't want to think of it as an increase in value exercise. It's not Pebble Beach. like that.
Yeah.
I think that's wrong as well.
Well, I think it
does that.
I think it's still very respectable that you've been approached to judge. It obviously means something of your character. Your moral fiber, knowledge. It's quite a calling.
Into my car next year.
Which one?
Why don't they start a Concorde
Le Mans, concourse or the show of the unexceptional.
Well, they should have it on the same day on the lawns across, not on the lawns, on the dirt across the road.
On the windswept.
And you have like
on the dead Kikuyu grass plants.
The dead Kikuyu grass.
Did you see the barn find Rolls? Right.
Yeah, yes. Beautiful.
Did you see it uses the same handbrake as my Renault?
Of course it does.
Bricks.
What sort of brick? I was going to say a brick. Good one. Okay.
Well, no, man,
Concourse de Lemons is a great idea.
It is a good idea.
I enjoyed it.
We should set it up with the
organized fruits. Could maybe organize the lemons.
We could, absolutely.
Pawpaws, right.
Okay. Well, Stu, thanks a lot for joining us on the show.
Yeah.
And good luck out there judging. And hope you guys have fun.
Can't we talk longer because I've got to go on Ignition TV.
We're going to force you to go on TV now. He's ready.
We want you to expose yourself as much as you can, not in a lewd way.
Yeah. In a sexual way. But
you are South African motoring connoisseur.
You're South African motoring gold. I mean, if you're approached to do this kind of stuff,
for free.
It's a big deal.
For free. That's us signing off from out in the field. Thank you for joining us on this special installment of Cargumentative. And we'll be back with another one next week, guys.
Indeed.
Cheers.
Thanks for having us.
Ciao.